Well, as many of you probably know, math is a very important subject, as is physics and engineering. Unfortunately, we have a cadre of politicians that seem to be hell-bent on bending the laws of math, physics, and engineering in pursuing political policies that ignore the objective realities that we face. Now, this, of course, can only go on for so long, but in today's big picture, we're going to talk about how it all does come down to math, and really there's no way out when we think about what we're facing with the upcoming debt ceiling debate, soaring debt levels, and much more. So we're going to throw quite a bit of math and facts at you today that we think all of you need to keep in mind and understand when it comes to the way forward. Now, before we do that, we're going to read a quote that really puts all of this into context. And this is from Genzo Parsons from his famous book, Dying of Money. And we actually had the privilege of speaking with Genzo Parsons. His real name is Ronald Marks, on the show. Jim Poplava interviewed him in 2013, but this is a quote from his book, which really made the book famous. And here Ronald says, "Everyone loves an early inflation. The effects at the beginning of inflation are all good. There is steep in money expansion, rising government spending, increased government budget deficits, booming stock markets, and general prosperity, all in the midst of temporarily stable prices. Everyone benefits and no one pays. That is the early part of the cycle. In the later inflation, on the other hand, the effects are all bad. The government may readily increase the money inflation in order to stave off the latter effects, but the latter effects patiently wait. In the terminal inflation, there is faltering prosperity, tightness of money, falling stock markets, rising taxes, and still larger government deficits, now accompanied by soaring prices and the ineffectiveness of all traditional remedies. Everyone pays and no one benefits. That is the full cycle of every inflation."
And that's where we find ourselves today, Chris, if you take a look at it. You know, the thing that we want to start this out, because right now we're in the midst of a debt ceiling debate every single day. It's the news headlines. Well, they're close to agreement. No, they're far apart. They're close to agreement. In the meantime, this is rattling the markets. And this is very similar to what we went through in 2011. However, in 2011, we were far less in debt as we have or where we are today. And this is something to really think about. Every single president in this new century has doubled the national debt. George W. Bush doubled it from $5 trillion to $10 trillion. Obama doubled it from $10 trillion to almost $20 trillion. And now we're at almost $32 trillion on the way to $40 trillion in the next couple of years. So with all this wrangling that we're seeing in Washington, we've got Fitch now considering a possible downgrade of U.S. debt. And that's what happened in 2011. S&P downgraded U.S. Treasury debt from AAA to AA. Fitch is thinking of doing the same right now. The problem that we have is Biden's 2024 budget amounts to $6.9 trillion. That is a half a trillion increase from the previous year. And that would take government spending would rise to almost 29% of GDP. And here's the problem that we are now running. If you take a look at 2022, it was a record year for tax revenues to the government. The government took in a little over $5 trillion in tax revenues. However, spending was $6.5 trillion. So the deficit was $1.5 trillion. Basically, the government is spending almost 30% more than revenue. And now we're facing three big things that's part of the budget that's going to be very hard to reverse. The big three are entitlements, which is Social Security, Medicare, and disability, defense spending. Remember, the U.S. has about 200 bases around the world, and now a precarious situation with interest. Interest is now rising exponentially, and the deficits are now equaling 7 to 8% of GDP, and that's on top of, Chris, with record tax revenues in 2022. The problem that's making the debt ceiling debate, that's accelerating it right now, is tax revenues dropped by $250 billion in April. And they were anticipating, the CBO was anticipating, a similar repeat of 2022. But here's why tax revenues are dropping. In 2022, the government took in an extra $450 billion in tax revenues. Where did that come from? It came from all those capital gains in 2021 when the markets were up over 20 to 30%. Employees were exercising stock options at the tech companies, and people had big capital gains. And so when they sold, all those capital gains became taxable, which was something the government wasn't anticipating. That created almost half a trillion of extra tax revenues. And so, like anybody else, they think in a linear fashion, well, if that's what we took in last year, we're anticipating more of the same this year. It did not happen because, as everybody knows, the bond market lost 25% last year. Tech stocks were down 33%. The S&P was down 20%. It was a brutal year in the financial markets. So there weren't any capital gains. There were capital losses. In fact, the CBO just scored Biden's budget. And our deficits will go from $1.5 trillion, Chris. In 10 years, there'll be $9.8 trillion, almost $10 trillion. And his budget would add $20 trillion to the national debt by the end of the decade. So we will be going from $32 trillion to $52 trillion. Something's going to happen along the way. So, and just to put this in perspective, and there are major reasons why we're in this mess. Debt has gone from $22.7 trillion in 2019 to where it is today. It's over $31.8 trillion. In the month of June, we're going to cross $32 trillion in debt. And here's the problem. At 5% interest, that's over $4 trillion in interest costs. At 6% interest, it's $3 trillion. The real big problem the government had here over the last decade, they made a strategic mistake. When interest rates were brought down and kept to near zero, what did individuals and corporations do? Well, if you're a homeowner, you probably refinanced your home. You locked in the lower interest rate. If you were a corporation, you rolled over your debt. You locked in lower levels of interest rates on your debt. The government did just the opposite. You know, at one time, they were paying like 0.1% on treasury bills. They did not lock in with the lower interest rates. And the problem is now a lot of that short-term debt is rolling over. And that's going to create a real problem here in the next 2 months, because one third of the government's debt, that's $10 trillion, is going to roll over and mature in the next 18 months. And when they roll that over, they could be facing 4, 5, maybe 6%. Who knows where this is going? I mean, 6-month T-bills are close to 4 and 5.5%. So you can imagine, if you're going from 0.1% on T-bills, and at one point they were paying actually nothing, and now you're rolling that debt over and you're forced to pay 4 to 5, depending on what they're doing with maturities, you know, that's why interest rates now are approaching $1 trillion a year for the government. It's almost 20% of all tax revenues.
You know, it's interesting because the Fed never really talks about this, is my understanding, about the high debt levels, or at least how their interest rate policy factors into this. But it does definitely sound like, given what you said, that, I mean, that there's pressure on the Fed to lower interest rates so that the government is not having to roll all of the debt that's coming due over the next 18 months, like you said, at these high interest rates. I mean, does that factor into this conversation?
Well, it definitely will as we get into the end of 2023. And as the economy goes into a recession in the third quarter of this year, which we highly expect. And Chris, one of the reasons we're calling this episode No Way Out, the recession is going to exacerbate the deficit as government revenues fall. So it's going to get worse as higher interest rates strengthen the U.S. dollar. The dollar has been rising here in the last couple of weeks, which is why commodity prices are falling. But the higher dollar is going to force central banks to dump treasuries to defend their currencies, which is why you're seeing long-term interest rates rise on the 10-year note and the 30-year bond. And banks are going to have to sell off treasuries. Central banks will do it to defend their currencies, but banks will do it to fund their credit losses and basically runs on deposits at banks, because banks are not paying that much and you can get better returns in money market funds and elsewhere. So at this point, we have gone beyond fixable. There is simply no way out of this predicament, and we're going to get to what we think the likely outcome and strategy is going to be going forward.
You know, Jim, I'm just hearkening back to years back in 2020. Feels like it was just yesterday. But when we were talking about with COVID and the lockdowns, how much of this just goes back to the policies and the decisions that were made over the last 3 years?
Well, this is where it really kicked in, because if you take a look at 2020, the deficit that year was over $5 trillion. Now, bear in mind what we did. We shut down the economy. So you can imagine what that did to government tax revenues. They fell off a cliff because people were in their home. The government shutdowns put 300,000 businesses out of business. And at the same time, you were cutting off supply. We saw supply chain issues. And then to replace the shutdown, the government was passing these massive trillion-dollar spending programs, shoveling money into consumer pocketbooks and into business pocketbooks, because you can't shut down an economy and say, you can't operate, keep your employees employed, and stay at home. How is that going to work? Well, we saw what happened. It just blew out the deficits. And then on top of that, Biden comes in and passes $7.5 trillion of new spending programs. So the combination of those two added $1 trillion in debt in just 3 years. And I keep saying this, but it really, I like to repeat this because it drives home what we have just done in 3 years. As I mentioned, it took 250 years and 43 American presidents to accumulate $10 trillion in debt. We just did that in 3 years.
So 2020 really was an important inflection point.
It really was, because think of what we did. We shut down our economy. And at the same time we shut it down, we kept people at home. You were on your laptop ordering from Amazon. We were shoveling money. We were giving people stimulus checks. We were giving corporations stimulus checks to keep their employees employed. I mean, what do you do to a business when you say you can't operate? You can't open your doors if you're a restaurant, but we want you to keep your employees employed. And in order to do that, they had the PPP program, and they gave you money if you kept your employees employed. Well, where'd that money come from? They simply printed it. They issued debt. And so that was a real pivot point of what we did to the economy and why we are dealing with the inflation we're dealing with today. And it's not going away, folks.
So what are the options that you foresee that we have to choose from?
Well, option one to bring down inflation is a recession. That's what the Fed is trying to do. They're trying to slow down demand for goods and services by raising interest rates and making it more expensive to borrow and do business. And Chris, that's already happening, which will exacerbate the deficit. It will lower GDP, tax revenues are going to fall, and increase government spending. Because when you get into a recession, unemployment benefits go up, all the kind of spending that the government kicks into gear to combat a recession. So we expect a recession in the third quarter. And so that is going on. But whether that's going to slow inflation, I don't see it. Because option two is to slash government spending. And there's no way that's going to happen under Biden and Democrats. Just look at the Biden's 2024 budget, which they refused to budge on. We've gone way, way too far for that to happen with the big three, which is entitlements and defense. And now the third big one and rising is going to be interest. So the only option is to cut expenses is for the Fed to cut interest rates and lower government interest expense. Option three is you cap yields on treasuries by yield curve control, and then you inflate. And as you inflate, you bring down that debt to a level of GDP that's more reasonable. And that's where they're going. Because if you take a look at right now, both monetary and physical policy are at odds with each other. So the Fed is trying to control inflation by raising interest rates. It's probably the most aggressive rate raising cycle I've seen in my entire career. But on the other hand, monetary or fiscal policy is shoveling money into the economy, and we still have supply problems. In other words, we're spending more money than the economy's ability to produce goods. The result is the inflation that you're seeing.
So there's not a lot of good options here, it sounds like. I mean, as you said, slashing government spending, probably not going to see that. In which case, you know, fiscal and monetary policy are essentially at odds with one another.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look at it. The Fed was not only raising interest rates, but they were doing quantitative tightening. In other words, they were shrinking their balance sheet. As bonds came due, they just allowed them to evaporate because we created the money out of thin air, and we allowed it to disappear under thin air. And the Fed took, at one point in June of 2022, the Fed's balance sheet got up almost to $9 trillion. They took it down to $8.3 trillion. But Chris, in 2 weeks, when we had all those banks go under, it quickly rose by almost $400 billion to $8.7 trillion with banking crisis. They're trying to bring it back down. We're roughly at about $8.4 trillion. But Chris, we anticipate more bank failures are coming. We talked about a study that was released by five college professors taking a look at our nation's banking system. 2,300 banks are underwater now. And it's going to get worse for banks as they tighten and remain on hold and the economy slips into recession. So the banks are losing money on their bond portfolio. They're also losing a lot of money in commercial real estate. So any further tightening is going to result in a further dysfunction of the treasury market because simply there is too much federal debt, there's massive federal deficits, and there's not enough global balance sheet liquidity to finance these deficits. Because right now, fiscal policy is superseding monetary policy is the dominant policy in running the economy. All of this, in my opinion, points to a hard landing versus a soft landing, which is what the legacy media is suggesting here.
And when you say a hard landing, of course, just so our listeners know, a hard landing would be a recession, soft landing would be a growth deceleration. But again, as we've been discussing on our show here, leading economic indicators are currently declining at a very steep clip, and this is aligning with a hard landing recessionary outlook, as well as many recessionary probability models at very high levels. So a hard landing does seem like to be the base case option currently.
And there's another thing that's arising out of this. More and more countries, as a result of using the dollar and the payments, the SWIFT payment system, are moving away from the dollar. So last year, the U.S. dollar reserve slid at 10 times the average speed of the last two decades. The U.S. dollar has lost 11% of its market share since 2016 and probably doubled that amount since 2008. So the result is we're now seeing Fed rate hikes are dramatically increasing U.S. government outlays. They're curtailing private sector activity, with the government now representing 25% of GDP. And as contradictory as this may sound, Fed rate hikes are increasing inflation as the supply of government dollars is rising faster than the private sector goods and services. Ben Bernanke and Oliver Blanchard, who used to be a chief economist at the International Monetary Fund, they basically said where this started is as we came out of the lockdowns, the economy began to heat up. And one of the first things the Biden administration did is they passed an almost $2 trillion stimulus bill that put more money into consumer pockets with basically they were handing out helicopter checks. So that just added more gasoline onto the inflation fire. And then on top of that, they talked about all the supply chain disruptions and a lot of the businesses that were put out. So you were putting more money into the economy at the same time you had reduced supply. And that gets back down to the classic definition of inflation: too much money chasing too few goods. And, you know, if you take a look at what the Fed did, it was not just that the government was putting money into the economy, so was the Fed. The Fed went from $4.1 trillion on its balance sheet in January 2019 to almost $9 trillion by the time we got to the summer of last year. So just as we've seen repeatedly throughout all of history, too much money printing, too much money chasing too few goods equals inflation. And at this point, Chris, the debt is too high. When you take a look at the three big items in the government's budget: entitlements, which is almost 70% of the budget now, defense spending, which is almost 20% of the budget, and now interest cost, which is greater than 10% of the budget and growing and getting even bigger.
And of course, this is why the S&P downgraded U.S. debt in 2011 and why Fitch has a warning now in place on a debt downgrade for the U.S. again if things don't get solved. Because we're now seeing, you know, with this huge rise in U.S. debt levels, the cost of financing that debt also exploding. This is putting pressure in terms of spending, the credit worthiness of the U.S., and that's where this battle is taking place in Congress about where can we cut, can we cut, how are we going to prioritize spending, are we looking at the chance of defaulting on certain debts. So these are all the things that are going to be talked about going forward from here. So within this long-term conversation that we're discussing here and some of the math, it just doesn't obviously work out. How do you plan your portfolio?
You know, Chris, I think the number one thing you should be focusing on now, if you're running your portfolio, is plan for inflation. And that's going to involve a number of different changes. If you are relying on bonds for income or invested in bonds, I would recommend going to individual bonds, shorter term, and a laddered bond portfolio versus funds and ETFs. So if I have a laddered bond portfolio, as that bond matures, let's say I have a one-year treasury bill. As that treasury bill comes due, I can always reinvest it at higher interest rates, because I think throughout this decade, the Fed may try to control longer-term interest rates with, let's say, yield curve control, but gradually they're going to rise just as they did in the 60s all the way to 1981. When interest rates got all the way up to 15%, I don't think they'll get that high this time because it would simply collapse the economy. There's just way, way too much debt out there, both government debt, corporate debt, and individual debt. I mean, consumer debt was up by almost $1 trillion last year. So if you look at all this debt and this inflation, we're going to see rates begin to rise as they're doing right now, as we're seeing in treasuries. The other thing I think you need to do, you have to be in precious metals to protect your capital as an insurance policy. And especially, we're very, very bullish on silver. The gold to silver ratio has never been this high. Silver is in broad demand. It's one of the reasons why you're seeing premiums of 80% or more on silver eagles. There's more demand than the government is putting out. And so you're paying huge premiums. We like, for example, silver rounds. We like 10-ounce silver bars, kilo bars, and 100-ounce bars, where you don't have to pay as much of a premium. The other thing is essential companies from staple food, drug, and medical. There, you have an opportunity right now because everybody is ganging up on the tech stocks and AI. But as inflation heats up, two things are going to happen. It's going to squeeze the budgets of individuals, especially the poor and the middle class. When your budget is squeezed, you're paying more for utilities, you're paying more for gasoline, you're paying more for medical, you're paying more for food. All of that leaves less money. And so what you have left is going to go to essentials. So we like consumer staples, food companies, drug and medical companies. And it's important if you're retiring or nearing retirement, as your cost of living is going up each year. You know, I'm a big advocate of blue chip dividend aristocrats because they increase their dividends each year. And as inflation goes up, you're going to need a higher income stream that is dependable. And that's what you can get with these aristocrats versus relying on the stock market to go up each year. So right now, if you take a look at what we own, and for our new clients, we're basically in short-term bonds because we expect treasury spreads and credit spreads to blow out this summer as the economy goes into recession. So, you know, right now we're getting yields of 5 to 7%, and we think we're going to get even more by the time we get to the problems that are going to start surfacing by the time we get to the end of the summer and into the early fall.
So when it comes to these longer term themes that we're discussing of how the math just doesn't work out and there's really no way out, aside from inflation being one of the main options that's going to be pursued, as we've seen time and time again throughout history. And this is also what Genzo Parson had said in that famous quote from his book, Dying of Money. There are ways in which you can prepare ahead of time with your portfolio. So some of those things that we just listed. And if any of you would like to get in touch with us about how we can also assist you to inflation-proof your portfolio for the years ahead. Again, we're talking about a long-term theme here. This is not month-to-month or even week-to-week, because we will likely see inflation decelerate in the short term, especially if we do enter a recession. But over the longer term, what we've been saying here is we expect inflation to remain at higher than average levels for the remainder of this decade. And that is something that a number of other strategists and long-term thinkers like Russell Napier have also been warning. So if you want to get in contact with our wealth advisors to see how we can assist you, go to financialsense.com and hit where it says contact us, or you can give us a call at 888-486-3939. Once again, that number is 888-486-3939.
In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Sheridan and myself, we hope you have a pleasant Memorial Day weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.